Good day. Welcome to Speak Up Arkansas. You're listening to KBF 88.3. Today, friends, we're talking about the faith community and social justice and human concerns. I'm your host for the day, Ryan Davis, and this again is Speak Up Arkansas. It can certainly be said of any point in human history that a certain urgency exists, that there is trouble in the land. The Christian Apostle Paul said in a letter that we are troubled, we're distressed, and we're cast down. 2017 does not hold in a special place in the history of tribulation, though it seems to. We're here in 2017 faced with a recklessness among our politicians and an unfortunate, some might say, complacency among the demos. One of my favorite preachers, German theologian and martyr Dietrich Bonhoeffer, said, "Silence in the face of evil is evil itself. God will not hold us guiltless. Not to speak is to speak. Not to act is to act." He said further that we are not simply to bandage the wounds of victims beneath the wheels of injustice. We are to drive a spoke in the wheel itself. In a time where the popular iteration of religion is toward personal enlightenment or personal salvation or even personal material gain, where is the faith community on issues of social justice and human concerns? What place do members and leaders of religious communities have in the fight for social justice? We're going to answer all of that and solve that problem today, right? We have with us today a distinguished panel of guests who I feel underqualified to be with, and so I'm grateful to be with them today. We have with us Reverend Magistrate Wendell Griffin, pastor of New Millennium Church, a judge in the 6th Judicial Circuit, and if I might ask, an iconoclast in his own right. He's the recent author of The Fierce Urgency of Prophetic Hope. It's a prophetic collection of sermons and other writings, a lot of which I've had the privilege to read and to mull over, and many questions. We have also with us Reverend Dr. Anika T. Whitfield. She's an organizer of the Save Our Schools campaign here in Little Rock, a 20-plus year volunteer in the Little Rock School District, the president of Hall High School's Parent Teacher Student Association, and not coincidentally, a 1991 graduate of Hall High School. We also have with us the Reverend Ed Wills Jr. Brother Ed was born and grew up in Memphis, Tennessee, but fortunately he's here with us in Little Rock, has been for 20 plus years. He currently serves as a priest at St. Michael's Episcopal Church here in Little Rock and has a lot going on otherwise. So welcome to you. We also have Reverend Steve Copley. He's an ordained elder in the Arkansas Conference of the United Methodist Church. He's a church and community worker with the General Board of Global Ministries and the current project / executive director of Interfaith Arkansas. And last but certainly not least, one of the others who accepted my gracious but belated invitation, Morgan Holliday. She's a member of the Ecumenical Buddhist Society. She's a social worker and the executive director of Compassion Works for All. They offer healing and hope by living and teaching compassion, especially to disenfranchised people in prison. Morgan works within the Arkansas prisons teaching meditation and compassionate communication. So welcome to all of our guests today. I'd like to begin with Reverend Griffin, whose book, The Fierce Urgency of Prophetic Hope, lit a match under dry feet for me. And so very grateful to have you here. And Reverend Griffin, I have to ask first, because you know the word prophetic is such a heavy word. It's actually a very intimidating word. And so explain for us what you mean or what your title means when it talks of prophetic hope.
Well, Reverend Davis, I thank you for inviting me to be in this august panel. This is high company for a country preacher like me.
Yes, indeed.
prophetic simply means speaking truth to power.
Absolutely.
And in the original sense, the prophets were both critics of the imperial regime, but they were also critics of the religious status quo. And I think we sometimes forget that one cannot be prophetic without being subversive, in the sense that you must present a different perspective, a perspective from below, to the prevailing narrative that's offered by the empire and by the ruling authorities, whether they be clerical, religious, commercial, business, political, or cultural. And so that's the short definition from a long-winded preacher.
Wow, okay. That was short from a long-winded preacher. Reverend Griffin, I you know, not since reading James Cone's The Cross and the Lynching Tree have I been challenged as a follower of Jesus Christ. You said specifically that your book is a challenge to those who call themselves followers of Jesus Christ. You said so within the text. I've heard you say it personally. Why this challenge to this particular group of folks?
Well, mainly because I view the people who self-identify as followers of Jesus as exhibit A in much of the problems in our society. If you look at the current regime in Washington, 4 out of 5 people who self-identify as evangelical followers of Jesus voted for a person who is a psychopath, a racist, a liar, a misogynist, a sexist, a homophobe, a xenophobe, and a militarist, and call themselves followers of the Prince of Peace. And so I think that somewhere in the text we read that judgment has to begin at the house.
Absolutely.
You don't start chopping down a tree until you start chopping at its trunk, at the base. The base of our problem across our society, and let's just say it across the world, has been the people who self-identify as followers of Jesus have been responsible for a great deal of the suffering in our time, in our world, across the age of what we call the modern era and the postmodern era. So I think that we have to own our stuff. I mean, we who are followers of Jesus have to own the fact that we're the ones who sat idly by while racism turned our school systems, and going to Dr. Whitfield's great work, into basically a private enterprise, where now we have private actors who are literally raiding and cannibalizing a public education school system for greed. And folks who call themselves followers of Jesus are sitting back passively, if not actively, applauding.
So I take it some of the head nods around the table. I always talk about us being at a round table. We're at more of a you listeners, but that's fine. We're still round, and I think, and I suppose I take from the nods of agreement that this idea that I keep hearing being put out there from Christian folks on the right in particular, that Christianity is not being oppressed in this nation, that there's no discrimination against Christians in our country. If anybody wants to speak to that.
Christianity is the oppressor. I mean, let's just call it what it is. I no longer call myself a Christian. I call myself a follower of Jesus, because all too often Christianity is oppressing people who are poor, people who are women, people who are vulnerable, people who are weak, people who are incarcerated, people who are sick, people who are not followers of Jesus. Mm-hmm. We are pressing. And so I don't think, I mean, I know there's a lot of folks who call themselves defenders of Christianity. I don't think Christianity needs defending. Mm-hmm. Christianity needs to apologize for a whole lot of stuff that it has been offensive about. Mm-hmm. But I don't think Christianity needs defending. Jesus would be offended by Christianity.
Indeed.
As it was presented in much of these places.
Reverend Wills, when I first encountered you, one of the things that you talked about was that, and I might be saying this incorrectly, but that you were given the ministry of reconciliation. Am I correct in that, Reverend Wills?
Yes. I mean, St. Paul talks about that we are ambassadors for Christ, and that he's handed on, that we've been given the ministry of reconciliation, entrusted with this ministry of reconciliation. And I do see that as the essential characteristic of what it is to be human, but specifically to be human as followers of Jesus, as hopefully Christians are, and that one way we can tell whether God is present in our lives and our work and is what is this reconciling work that we've been handed, given, how's it working? What's it look like? Are people being brought together or are they being separated? You know, we sum up so many things and, you know, in the commandment, love your neighbor as yourself, or love God, then love your neighbor as yourself. The writer in 1 John says, you know, he who says that they love God and hate their brother or sister is a liar. If I am not moving toward healing and wholeness with my brother or sister, with another human being, regardless of stated faith or identified faith or whatever, then, you know, I don't think that's what God's up to in the world. Judge Griffin said that defending Christianity, I always get nervous when somebody feels like they have to defend God. If God needs my defending, what does that make me? So, yes, you heard me right. I said as a young, smart aleck, I'll use that word on the air, person at 20 years old at what I call my functional confirmation, that I knew what I'd be doing for the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. I just didn't know where I'd be doing it, how I'd be doing it, with whom I'd be doing it. I'd never dreamed I'd be on a radio. I'd be sitting in a room in Little Rock, Arkansas. But I knew wherever I was sitting and being and doing, I'd be about the business of reconciliation and healing.
Hmm. Absolutely. And, you know, not to go too expansively, but I think sometimes that people try to create a tension between the idea of reconciliation and the idea of being a prophetic witness for the social concerns that surround us today. And we're just talking, so anybody can speak to that. You know, how do we reconcile ourselves to each other and also speak in a manner that is prophetic and in a manner that afflicts those people who are comfortable, as folks say, and comfort those people who are afflicted?
Well, I jump in. There was a theologian from the Reformed tradition, Reinhold Niebuhr, and I think if we take Ed's comment about reconciliation and love, for him, he said, the public face of love is justice, or prophetic justice. He didn't use that word, but that it's the same thing. And that prevents us from seeing love, either contradictions in the two, or that love just gets collapsed into this kind of syrupy, sentimental, Hallmark kind of, I love X, Y, and Z. No, the public face of love, to say I love my brother or sister, means I'm willing to stand up and speak out for them to ensure that their lives have justice. And I think that's how you hold the two in tension.
And of course, you know, Micah tells us in 6 and 8, you know, what does God require of you?
Yes, say right? It together.
So we do what? We
do justice.
Right.
Love mercy.
And walk
with humility. Amen.
Yeah. So in order to be prophetic, we have to be visionaries. We have to actually see God in other people. And we have to see God's truth and be willing to speak God's truth in love. And sometimes that truth cuts, sometimes that truth hurts. But obedience, the scripture tells us, is far better than sacrifice. So we don't need to worry about sacrificing relationships of friends or even foes. I think if we are obedient to God's word, that love alone will reconcile us. And so we need to be reminded that we're not perfect in all of our ways. We need to be reminded that there's room for us to not only seek forgiveness of others, but to walk in forgiveness and Absolutely. To reconcile.
And just to add, the prophetic word that Judge Griffin's talking about comes out of a deep sense of love for the community that you're speaking on behalf of. And sometimes that we always have to keep that before us, that it's that's what drives those who speak the prophetic word. It's those who are facing second-class citizenship because of their race or their gender or those situations, but it's love that drives the prophet to speak. Look at Jesus' life.
Mm-hmm. Morgan, you offer a perspective that none of us offer. I noted from just kind of reading. I've been reading about you, and you studied and help me if I'm not pronouncing this correctly, but
Vipassana.
Yeah. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Vipassana meditation. And, you know, one of the things that stood out for me, because I hear this and fairly often, I guess, these days, the idea of mindfulness. And just curious as to how the idea of mindfulness and compassion, because, again, what I'm trying to say is that, you know, we seem to have out here this idea that either you're being, you know, really nice to people, or you have to go and, you know, bang on their doors and yell at them. And you know, and those are two diametrically opposed things. And so when we hear things like mindfulness, they sound like, you know, if I could touch mindfulness, I feel like mindfulness would be very soft and compassion. And how does that lend itself to your work? You know, and you've worked for many years and dealing with restorative justice and you know, community interventions as alternatives to mass incarceration. So how does that lend itself to that?
Sure. Well, this idea of compassion, it's not as soft as we might think on the surface. Compassion means wanting to end the suffering of others. Mm. And so that can be pretty tough. And that can be cutting. I was really intrigued by the conversation about love, and I think that from the Buddhist perspective, one of the things that meditation helps us to realize is that we are not as disconnected as we sometimes think that we are. When we believe and when we see ourselves as just me, this is ego talking, but the truth is that we are interdependent. And when we can live our lives and when we can see suffering, mm-hmm. and realize that when this person over here is suffering, I'm suffering too. Mm-hmm. It helps us to connect to each other and to transform. You asked about Vipassana meditation, and that's really an insight tradition. That's about wisdom, which is very cutting. Mm. So
wisdom is very cutting.
Yeah.
Explain that to me.
So when we can see the world with wisdom, we're able to cut through suffering.
I see.
We're able to cut through injustice and adversity that keeps us apart.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Indeed. You're listening to KBF 88.3. This is Speak Up Arkansas, and we have with us again a distinguished panel of guests at our round table. We're talking about faith communities and social justice and human concerns. And we've been served a cold dish of lack of concern for humanity at our Capitol this entire session. I feel fortunate in some ways that so many things have failed, and you know, grateful that there's been some pressure brought to bear by people in various faith communities and just people in general. We have scheduled, and I thought perhaps that we were in a race with the state of Texas. We have scheduled in the month of April several executions over the course of 8 days, about as many executions as there are days. 8 executions, 10 days. And, you know, it struck me as, well, as terrible, of course, but it also struck me as I was almost afraid to say it, but it's oddly hypocritical for our very strongly and supposedly pro-life administration to rush so quickly to commit these people's lives to death. One of the questions, Reverend Griffin, that continues to arise in the minds, hopefully, of everybody who has the opportunity to read your text, The Fierce Urgency of Prophetic Hope, is how can we speak of hope in a time of deep division?
Well, I think we have to speak of hope from the context of the, and I come at this from the context of the Hebrew and New Testament prophets, which always, and I'll pick up on your reference to James Cone, spoke of the tragic comic. James Cone and Cornel West, the tragic comic aspect of hope. Mm. Hope challenges us to look honestly at the tragic realities of our situation, and also look also at the power of God to, as the old folks used to say, make a way out of no way. Mm. To turn down into up, to turn Good Friday into Easter Sunday, mm-hmm. and to really transform situations so that the person who was last becomes first and the person who was first becomes last. Mm-hmm. That's one way of speaking of hope. The second way of speaking of hope is dealing with the honesty of what Augustine said. You gotta talk about the two daughters of hope. Anger and courage. Mm-hmm. Anger at the way things are, and courage to make sure they don't stay the same. Mm-hmm. Because it takes both of those things operating in dynamic tension, but synthesis, to produce hope. And the third thing, speak of hope, you can't speak of hope without talking about the power of repentance. I mean, we're in the season of Lent. And it does not do any good talk about repentance if one cannot speak of repentance from the hopeful perspective. What I find most ironic, and I'll use your word hypocritical, about our upcoming set of executions is the first one will occur the day after Easter Sunday.
Wow.
No, the first two. Hmm. The first two executions will occur the day after Resurrection Sunday. And so, in a real sense, the state of Arkansas, with its professed love of life, will be demonstrating its own hypocrisy by insisting on killing people using a medication that we wouldn't use to sedate, to euthanize a dog. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't euthanize a dog in Arkansas using the medication compound that has been set up for killing these 8 humans. It would be a violation of veterinary medicine. But we are going to knowingly, intentionally, deliberately kill 8 people and start the day after Resurrection Sunday.
I just wanted to chime in a little bit, if I could, a slightly different subject, but it still touches on hope. And a lot of times when we are in the community and people are asking about the Little Rock School District and the decisions that were made by the state by people who have been appointed to serve as our leaders, not elected, not selected by the community, but people that were appointed to serve, and that these people have decided to evict children from their schools and to essentially put to death their school buildings so that they could no longer go into a place where they could be well educated. And so people ask me, since that decision has been made, why do you keep fighting if they've already said it's over? And because I'm a Christian, because I am a follower of Christ, because I believe in hope, I believe in resurrection power. So I believe that the very persons who have made decisions to put to death things that I believe deserve life, that they can be restored back to life. And so very similarly with the executions, it is my hope that the governor, that the more the faith communities come together, and not only in prayer and meditation, but in action, that we would really seek that justice together. So I think we have to always keep hope alive if we're true believers.
And thank you, Reverend Whitfield, for that sort of transition, because, you know, not only are we talking about these actual and very unfortunate moves towards mass execution, but we are talking about, in some sense, a death of public trust in this state. Not to over-dramatize it, I hope I'm not. You know, so I want to ask generally, what's on our panel? What is on your radar? What things, you know, very actual things and non-temporal things are on your radar right now as we, thank God, wrap up this legislative session and as we move forward?
Well, I hate to grab the mic again, but there are several things that are on my mind. You know, we have a millage that the superintendent of school wants to put forward for the city of Little Rock, and that is supposedly to help improve the structures of the buildings that are currently in the Little Rock School District. But what I find, again, very hypocritical is the fact that the reason why the Little Rock School District was taken over was because of academic distress. And there seems to be no emphasis, no direct action to address helping children get back on an academic pathway towards success. Mm-hmm. And one of the other fallacies is that this superintendent, who ultimately doesn't have power, who was appointed by a person that was appointed by the state, and that this person that was appointed by the state, that is his boss, Commissioner Key, who has vocally and publicly said that he supported Senate Bill 308, which would allow the takeover of public school buildings for charter schools, to lease them at as low as probably a penny, because it's fair market value or less, that this superintendent in this climate would even suggest that we would vote for a millage, knowing that the commissioner has no intention of making sure that our school buildings are secured. Sure. For our community. So that's high on my radar. And I hope that every faith group, I hope that every social group would come out against the millage, not because we don't ever need one, but because now is not the ripe or the right time to do it, because we do not have elected leadership that is representing the people that is being affected by this.
So I'll stack on top of that same question for our entire panel again. What space does the religious or the faith community have in this? I've heard you know, I hear people say, and I'll say this, Reverend Whitfield has said in no uncertain terms, and I've you know, received the email and you know, heard her in person say that, you know, we demand more involvement from, more connection from those people in the faith communities to engage with this particular issue. And so, you know, I often hear folks say, oh, well, I'm praying mightily for the school district, or, you know, they're in my thoughts and they're in my prayers. And, you know, as much as I believe in the power of prayer and of thoughtfulness and of mindfulness and of, you know, keeping the, you know, those things in your heart, as it were, you know, what actual hand, foot, mind, and mouth space should the faith communities, various faith communities, have in these particular issues that you all can speak to in particular.
I can.
And we'll come back to that actually after our break. Thank you to our engineer for the mindful reminder. You're again listening to Speak Up Arkansas, 88.3 KABF. Welcome back. You're listening to Speak Up Arkansas at KBF 88.3. And we have, again, our panel of guests. Today, we're talking about faith communities, social justice, and human concerns. Listeners out there, I want to encourage you to engage with us. We want to hear from you. You can call us at 501-433-0088. But if you're not the talking type, you can email us at speakupar@gmail.com. That's S-P-E-A-K-U-P, capital A, capital R, at gmail.com. I want to reintroduce our panel for those of you who might just be joining us. We have with us Reverend Wendell Griffin, pastor of New Millennium Church and author very recently of The Fierce Urgency of Prophetic Hope. We also have with us podiatrist by trade, but organizer and reverend by faith, organizer of the Save Our Schools campaign, president of Powell High School's PTSA, Reverend Dr. Anika T. Whitfield, Reverend Ed Wheels, a almost native Arkansan at this point, pastor, priest at St. Michael's Episcopal Church, Reverend Steve Copley, executive director of Interfaith Arkansas, and my good friend Morgan Holliday from the Ecumenical Buddhist Society and executive director of Compassion Works for All. I think when we left, we were talking about what's on the radar for each of you, and compounded on top of that question was the second question, an urgent question I might add, of what space should the faith communities occupy outside of their good thoughts and warm prayers in the areas of social justice and human concerns. I know, for instance, that probably every church down to the steeple, every religious community down to the temple has a food pantry. They have, you know, some sort of ministry geared toward feeding folks. And I think that's a beautiful thing that we ought to be at the forefront of feeding people who are hungry. But what of those who are hungry for justice? What of those behind the prison walls of mass incarceration? What of those who languish at the margins of what is a falling, I won't say failing, but what is a falling system of education that prefers some over others? What of those who, you know, occupy the space in our lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer communities who are constantly faced with? We have a caller. Go ahead, caller. And who am I speaking with?
Thank you for taking my call. Sir, as you well know...
Tell us your name, if you don't mind.
My name's Keith.
Okay, welcome.
I just wanted to say a few things. I know that our system of government is a three-legged stool. It's, you know, it's the legislative branch, the executive branch, and the judicial branch. The situation with the people that have been sentenced with the death penalty, that was done under the judicial branch, and probably in just about all the cases, a jury heard the, you know, the evidence and made a decision to impose the death penalty. And so I never thought I'd be in this position, depending on our current executive form of people in the government. But if the governor, for example, were to go against the will of the people in something like this, that's a dangerous path to a slippery slope to start on. Now, in other words, we had an election last year, and I think the population voted to legalize marijuana for medical issues and things like that. The legislature's not really acted on that like they should. So there's not, you know, it's not a consistent sort of thing, but I just wanted to point that out. And that's all I'll say. And thank you very much for taking my call.
Thank you. Thank you. And I'll say I guess I'm only supposed to be moderating, but I want to agree that our government in general is rather selective in what will of the people it's willing to go against or to go for. But what of what he said?
Two things. First of all, I thank the brother for calling in and lifting up the issue of the executions, and also raising the issue of the legalization of medical marijuana. I hope we'll call it the decriminalization of medical marijuana, because it really has not been legalized, it's just simply been decriminalized. Mm-hmm. The question is whether we will at some point in our time come to the realization that we only chose to criminalize marijuana because of our racism. That marijuana was legal in this country for a long time. That until the 1930s, marijuana was legal. But only because of racism did marijuana become criminalized. And that we have seen the uptick in mass incarceration as a direct result of the war on people who use drugs, not the war on drugs. You can't declare war on a substance. You declare war on people. Mm-hmm. And the war was declared on people who use drugs. And I'm not just talking about people who commit violence, because most of the people who have been convicted of drug offenses have been convicted of non-violent drug offenses, so much so that we have seen the mass incarceration system rise exponentially. Mm-hmm. The last thing I'll add is two things I'm looking at. Tomorrow I'm concerned about House Bill 2332, the so-called First Amendment Defense Bill that Representative Bob Ballinger is running, because it's targeting, I call it the discrimination against my same gender loving LGBTQ and particularly trans brothers and sisters, because it basically tries to use the First Amendment as a license to discriminate. Okay. And says that if you discriminate against somebody and you claim a religious excuse for it, then you get it off.
And this is a bill, Reverend Griffin, if I'm not mistaken, that has been, or a version of it rather, has been defeated in at least two states, if I'm not mistaken.
It has been, but you understand, haters never stop, and therefore those who believe in justice cannot stop either.
Indeed.
I would like to remind people that nobody has been put in jail in this society because of the private expression of their religion or the public expression of their religion when they do it in their private capacity. But this is legislation that I think is going to be what I will call the Arkansas version of the Kentucky County Clerk, the Kim Davis bill.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all it is. And it's also another way of saying how much some people do not like the Supreme Court's 2015 decision that struck down bars against same-sex marriage. But that's an issue that's very near and dear to me because, quite frankly, we are using religion and the First Amendment. I feel strongly about faith and liberty. We're using faith and liberty as a license to be oppressive. Mm. And that is the very nature, the very definition of tyranny.
How fortunate for you listeners, you're listening to Speak Up Arkansas. It's 88.3 KABF. Remember, you're more than welcome to call in 501-433-0088 or to email us at speakupar@gmail.com. That's speakup in lowercase ar in caps at gmail.com. I just got the head. Now, it doesn't matter how you write it. speakupar@gmail.com. So again, feel free to call us, to email. We want to hear from you. You know, just to kind of circle back around, you know, Reverend Copley, Interfaith Arkansas, and you know, and maybe this is just my own personal ignorance, but you know, there just it's not a whole lot of interfaith justice work that I see happening in our state, and I guess I say, what do you think about that? But you know, in this challenge, because I think we all agree that, you know, the various faith communities, the religious community in general, should be at the forefront of the various evils and wiles of that confront folks every day. And so talk to us a bit about the work of Interfaith Arkansas.
Well, I have to make clarification because Interfaith Arkansas doesn't do the advocacy work. That's Faith Voices Arkansas.
Faith Voices,
and so I need that clear distinction because
absolutely.
Some of our partners that do the Interfaith Arkansas work don't necessarily engage in advocacy. But Faith Voices Arkansas, and we work with a number of interfaith groups. Some of it from an interfaith perspective, we have Morgan from a Buddhist tradition. Some faith traditions don't have the strong, particularly Protestant prophetic tradition or an understanding thereof.
Uh-huh.
But still have, and so, like, for instance, through Faith Voices Arkansas, we do a lot of work at the Capitol. So they might not see that as the world they're engaged in. The interesting thing for Arkansas, though, I grew up in Northwest Arkansas.
Hmm.
That whole quadrant of the state 37 years ago was almost overwhelmingly white,
mm-hmm.
Christian, evangelical Christian. Now, not 15 miles from where I grew up, about 4 years ago, they built a brand new Hindu temple. There are Sikh communities, there are Muslim communities. The state is changing, and all the traditions talk about how you treat your neighbor and how you treat one another. And
yes.
I think Morgan did a really good job explaining that. I think as that continues to develop, we work with folks at how you can advocate by calling your legislator to express that. You may not come down and go into the Capitol, but that's a natural piece. So as different faith traditions continue to grow in Arkansas. I think you'll see more activity among them, but it's just a process, and it takes some time. I would say some issues that I'm following. Economic justice is an important issue. All these issues are important. Faith Voices Arkansas follows 8 different areas. But the economic justice issues, and I'll just pull a couple out. One yesterday that really was, for me, disheartening was a very simple equal pay bill. And it failed. And what it required was for employer people who had 9 or more employees. Now think about that, 9 or more. So that's a fairly substantial organization. They had to begin to file paperwork about how they paid men and women. It failed in this day and age. Payday lending. And we were able to get rid of payday lenders a few years ago who end up through through loans for very small amounts, end up charging 400-500% interest. And from a biblical point of view, for me, it's stealing. And it certainly violates the state constitution on usury at 17%. Well, it's come back in a new guise. But what's exciting is there is a bill to basically put credit service organizations out where they can't function, and it is now headed to the House. And if so, that will end payday lenders. And then just one other piece is habitability of rental property. And it's just amazing that we don't have Arkansas is the only state that really doesn't have any understanding of habitability in the country, and finding it really difficult to pass a bill where you have to have a safe environment, you know, no mold, no issues of bad wiring, all that, when you rent property to somebody. Mm-hmm. And we know that many folks who rent are lower income. So, right. you know, 2,000 times in Old and New Testament, we see a God who's concerned about the poor. And when we start talking about mass incarceration, we start talking about the poor. On the whole, when we talk about the death penalty, we're talking about the poor. So those are some, and then wage theft's another issue. We are struggling to get a simple bill that says if you employ 5 or more people, you will give them a pay stub. Now think about that. And we're having trouble passing that right now. And who does that impact? It impacts traditionally folks who are poor. So those are issues that are near and dear to my heart. And as I said, all faith traditions can come around those. That talks about how you treat your neighbor.
Reverend Davis, I think it bears repeating that, as Reverend Copley said, Faith Voices, the advocacy end of this work, goes beyond having a prayer meeting.
Indeed.
Frederick Douglass said. Frederick Douglass said, "I prayed for freedom for 10 years, but God answered me when I prayed with my legs." There's some things you can't do on your knees. You're going to have to do with your feet and your mouth and your hands and your votes and your advocacy. And I would just challenge those who are people of any faith or no faith to remember one thing that somebody called James once wrote: faith without works is dead. If you don't have some effort, if you don't put forth some product, the best faith in the world will not grow a crop if you don't plant seeds and if you don't get to till the ground. And so what I would like to see more of, and I say this intentionally, and I'll say it, I've been black all my life. I say intentionally to black people because unfortunately I think a lot of black people of faith have taken lessons about advocacy from white folks of faith who don't believe that there's something righteous about being active on public policy issues surrounding faith. They seem to have gotten that the prophets were all about public policy and social justice, and they did it always in the name of faith. I would simply say, remember, we wouldn't have the right to vote if all we'd done was prayed.
Mm-hmm. There's a Buddhist verse that says, ardently do what must be done. It doesn't say ardently hope for good things to happen or ardently meditate on those things and wish them into existence. And I think we've all spoken to that in some level today.
That's absolutely right. And so this idea of engaged Buddhism, it's come into popularity within the last 40 years. And Thich Nhat Hanh was the person who coined that term. But what he said about it is Buddhism is engaged. And ultimately, we're all called upon, no matter what our faith or no faith, we're all called upon to witness suffering. We're called upon to witness the injustices of our world and to act on those. At the Ecumenical Buddhist Society, we have practice groups. So we have teachers, but not one preacher or faith leader. And one of our practice groups is this Dharma in action. It's you know, how can we come together to actively participate in our community to engage with others who are having a difficult time?
Hmm. Again, family, you're listening to Speak Up Arkansas on KABF 88.3. Remember, you may call. You have my permission. You're more than welcome to 501-433-0088 or email us at speakupar@gmail.com. And again, we're speaking with our guests today, Reverend Ed Wills, Reverend Wendell Griffin, Reverend Steve Copley, my good friend Morgan Holliday, and Reverend Dr. Nika Whitfield. And wow, what a vibrant discussion. As we kind of near an ending, we don't have very long, unfortunately. It's more swift than I thought it would be. Reverend Wills, I know we spoke before, and you have some things in the works, I don't know that you want to touch on those in particular because they are in the works. But if you could begin as we round this discussion out to talk about some very specific and particular things. You know, I have been guilty of admonishing a congregation of people to get out there and do some good things. And, you know, people just kind of walk outside and think like, well, you know, hopefully a good thing will fall out of the sky for me to do. And so I ask you first and the rest of us, what actual things could we be doing right here in this state toward the goal of community? What trees can we plant right now, the shade of which our children can sit under?
One of the things that I've been impressed with lately, particularly thinking about this notion of political, political in the sense of citizenry. Political is what we are. Now, partisan is something else, but being political, that's just that's what human nature is. We're city dwellers, at least a lot of us. We live in communities, and we must figure out how to act with one another. I was struck when I was looking at this recently that the word politikos, there's actually an idiom, an Hebrew idiom, that is the root of that word, that uses that same word that we translate political, that says, let conversation be. So this word political, eumai is what it was, is the Greek version of it, became an idiom for let conversation happen or live, just live. So living is conversation. Conversation is being political. That's what I'm working on. We've lost what it is to be political because we don't know how to talk with each other anymore. We don't know how to have a conversation. Another fascinating thing about the word conversation is the root word of conversation is conversion. we're not getting converted. I'm not getting converted because I've lost the art of talking to somebody who's different than I am. So one of the most practical things I know we can do is to gather forums where we can have a conversation, where we can be political in its essence. I know we're moving towards the end of time, but I think most of you will know the verse from, I believe it's Philippians, that our citizenship is in heaven, St. Paul says. Do you remember? Here you go, I'll ask the old pastor here. Do you remember how the King James Version translates that?
You do.
Yeah. Our conversation is in heaven. A conversation is what is synonymous with heaven. You want heaven here on earth. You want social justice. You want truth. We need to have a conversation. That's a practical thing we can do. And I'm working to gather diverse conversation here in the city.
Right on. We look forward to it. Reverend Griffin.
Conversation is a good way to put it. I think that conversation has to include all voices.
Indeed.
And we have to be willing to not only speak our truth, but hear the inconvenient and oftentimes the unhappy truth spoken from voices that we have tended to oppress because we found their message too painful, their truth too abrasive, their truth too condemnatory. And I think that if we are to have honest conversations, we must have those conversations in the spirit of hearing from those who we have historically been unwilling to heed. I don't have conversations with the usual suspects anymore, because the usual suspects have gotten us into the stuff we got into. I want to hear voices that have not been heard, because they will have perspectives that we have not listened to.
We have an emailer, Nancy Doctor. She asked this question, and somebody wants to, and Nancy, I apologize, we won't be able to be too expansive, but would any of the panel speak about their own thoughts on the divide in our society on the issue of pro-choice / pro-life positions on right to an abortion? Can we ever as a society resolve the conflict?
I would like for somebody to talk about what is pro-life about killing 8 people using inhumane methods. Okay, I don't want anybody to tell me about pro-life unless they're going to be consistent with it. If you're pro-life and you're pro-war, okay, if you're pro-war at life and you're cutting food stamps, if you're pro-life and you're cutting people off of health care, if you're pro-life and you're telling people that they cannot have any, shut your mouth, because you're not pro-life, you're pro-birth. There's a difference between being pro-birth and pro-life.
A great distinction, for sure.
And I wouldn't leave the, if you're pro-life, are you closing down schools?
Come on. You're
keeping kids from being educated.
I want to say I love Reverend Whitfield because she stays on point. I certainly appreciate that. So just, we got about one more minute, and I hate to step on the rest of our panel's time, but just quickly. Well, let me say this to our listeners. If you email us at speakupar@gmail.com, and if our panel of guests would be willing to offer us some things that we can pass along to you toward this, that'd be greatly appreciated. Reverend Copley, Morgan, if you all want to add in anything in particular, please do.
I would just certainly encourage people to let our governor know what you think about the scheduled executions, and to show up to the town hall on March 30th at 6 p.m. at the Bowen Law School, and to show up on April 14th, Good Friday, at the Capitol at 12:30 p.m., and to show up on April 17th at the governor's mansion. That's the first scheduled execution. So please raise your voice on this issue.
Yes, indeed. From the Quran, my good friend Imam Akil Hamidullah could not be with us today, but from the Quran, you who believe be the upholders of justice. You who believe the upholders of justice. I want to thank our guests, Reverend Ed Wills, Reverend Wendell Griffin, Reverend Steve Copley, Morgan Holliday, Reverend Dr. Anika Whitfield for being with us. This is Speak Up Arkansas. Next week on Speak Up Arkansas at 8.3, Arkansas Hunger Relief Alliance No Kid Hunger Campaign. Our guests will talk about the Breakfast After the Bell programs, free summer meals, and all of those very, very vital things. One of the greatest prophetic voices in our country's history had a book titled, Where Do We Go From Here? Chaos or Community. Thank you all for listening. This has been Speak Up Arkansas, 88.3 KBF.
This is KABF in Little Rock, 88.3, the voice of the people in Central Arkansas.
It's time for Radio Cows, a weekly program.